What I see are family members who are desperately searching for anything that's going to make a difference. What I see is a testament of resilience, because even though you feel like you've been beaten down into the ground with this, you're still in it.
Welcome to the Family Addiction Coaching Podcast. My name is Patrick Doyle. I am one of only 22 certified CRAFT clinicians in the United States, a family addiction coach, and a social worker with 30 years' experience in the addiction and mental health fields. From this series, you'll learn insider tips and strategies to best help a loved one with addiction gain health and recovery. You will also learn how to improve your family's overall quality of life. Let's get started.
Has your loved one's addiction got you feeling paralyzed, frustrated, like you have no hope? Do you feel like you're walking on eggshells?
Yep, that was me. That's exactly how I felt in the past. So I truly understand families that are trying to cope with a loved one's addiction. And that's the people that I work with in my rest groups. So that's exactly who I created the rest groups for, are for people that are struggling to cope with their loved one's addiction.
Yeah, Lori, I am fascinated with your rest groups, and I have referred a number of families to them. What does the rest program do for folks?
The rest groups were designed in a way, so REST, which is an acronym, stands for Resources, Education, Support Together. And getting families to as many resources as possible. So a lot of families don't know the abundance of different types of resources that are available to them and to their loved ones in particular. Everything you described at the start of this is exactly how many, many, many families come in to a rest meeting. And usually they're at a tipping point, right? They're feeling all the feelings. Yeah, a crisis. Or at least they feel like it's a crisis. They're frustrated. They feel like that they have tried so many different things and nothing's working and that nothing ever will. They have no hope that things are going to change. They've been given lots and lots of just unsolicited advice. It's not really based in anything other than opinion. And they're not feeling good about themselves and have tried lots of different things, but those things haven't worked. I'm going to invite you in to possibly learn some new skills and strategies that are going to make a little bit of positive change or head into a different direction.
On an emotional gut kind of level, what do you see?
What I see are people who love someone who's using substances in a very difficult, troubling way. But I see family members who are here and who love them very much and are scared. I also see a lot of people who don't see it as an illness. They're so frustrated because they don't know where this is all coming from. They don't believe that there is anything out there that's going to help them.
And I hear a lot of guilt, like, why can't I fix this? Why can I not fix this? How did this happen? And what was I doing? And do you see that as well?
Oh, yeah. The guilt is overwhelming. The shame. What I see are family members who are desperately searching for anything that's going to make a difference. And to me, what I see is a testament of resilience, because even though you feel like you've been beaten down into the ground with this, you're still in it.
Yeah. And it's hard to not give up when everything that you have done seems like it hasn't worked.
Right. Right.
And I love that.
And one of the biggest issues that a lot of family members feel incredibly guilty and shame and blame about is either, and I'm going to say, kicking their loved one out or having your loved one live in your home. There's lots of judgment out in that world based on what decisions you make as a family. And in our groups, if each family is an expert in their own family, they're going to make decisions that are best for them.
How does it work? How does your program do what it does?
There is an element of community that we just wrap around one another, right? And in fact, the foundation of everything is how to communicate with your loved one in a way that you're creating a safe space and an environment where you're actually really communicating with one another. You know, the old saying of sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt. Ah, baloney.
Right.
Baloney. Words cut deep. So just changing how you communicate is and there's lots. I mean, we spend months and months on communication skills and strategies.
Yeah.
Then the other skills that we work on are interactive skills. And all of the skills and strategies that we're talking about are evidence-based. We know that they work for pretty much everything.
There's a lot about communication that most people don't know about, and that by learning different approaches, we can get better results, we can have more of an impact, and we can communicate in a way that leaves that other person with the addiction feeling understood, loved, respected, and cared for, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Now, aren't there some people out there who would say, well, helping a person in active addiction feel better, don't we want them to feel worse? I don't want them to feel like I'm the dog that they can kick when they come home. But it's like, isn't that, I don't know, don't they call it enabling?
They do call it enabling. We try to avoid that word because it's been so weaponized against us.
Yeah.
And that's what I call an antiquated approach. If you understand substance use disorder, it is based in shame and blame. And oftentimes the response that you're getting, the lying, the avoiding, the yelling, the blaming of you, those things are all a response to very difficult, traumatic, maybe a traumatic experience, but it's the challenging feelings and thoughts that the individual is having, and piling more onto that is only going to up that response. And so, right? And so actually the opposite needs to happen. And, you know, this is kind of like that rock bottom philosophy that a lot of people have, where actually people can go so far down that they're never... They don't return from there. Or it's just so difficult to claw your way out, you just give up.
Yeah. That's the number one thing that I hear from families, that if they don't call someone out, then they think that that's sending a message that they are condoning it. But in reality, that's not exactly what happens, right?
Right. That's not what happens.
It's hard for families to grasp that, don't you think? And it's very common, because this idea about confronting the person with the addiction, it's drummed into us, you know, as soon as we're born, it seems, and that we're told that we have to confront everything and we have to be in control. And if they don't work with us, then we kick them out.
It's the same. It's that we're talking about doing the same thing. Why would you want to have a conversation with someone who's high or someone who's, you know, been drinking or some, it's not going to have much of an impact.
So timing is everything. Right. It sounds like what you're saying. And so one of these skills that people learn is, when do I see a window of opportunity to address something? And picking our times.
Right. I also think that a lot of family members think, when we say don't confront in the moment, right? Don't confront.
Yeah.
That what we're saying is you're never going to talk about it. And that's not it. Because actually what you just said, Patrick, is you're going to wait for the right time and you are going to address it. In an assertive way, not an aggressive way, a well thought out plan. You're going to use your communication skills and do it in a way that's more compassionate and understanding, but you're also going to still hold steady with your own boundaries.
I'm going to own that decision. I'm going to take my power back, and I'm not going to let provocative behavior trap me into feeling like I have to respond. So I have choices.
I love that. That's it,
yeah.
Patrick.
People need to feel like they have agency, that they have a choice about what they do. And I think with that before, when people show up the first time in your groups, I think they're feeling like they have no choices or very few and very little control over what happens. And you and the program, the group, the community, you help them learn another way.
But we help them learn what they do have control over and take control of it. You do have control over a lot of stuff. You do have control over that. I also think that family members do. They don't know the skills, right? And so they respond in ways that they know, and they don't know of any other way. And so you come into the groups, you're going to learn new and different strategies. So this is what I hear from families a lot. I hear, well, I already do communicate positively. And what that says to me is, I don't think you know what I mean. Right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not talking about having flowery, lovely conversations. I'm actually talking about having very difficult conversations better on your part, not your loved ones. You're improving your communication skills, they're not. It's just going to be you changing and you communicating better and then influencing this other person in your life. They have to change if you change. They have no choice.
Right. I recently published how to avoid kicking somebody in active addiction out of the home. And I got a lot of feedback, and they said, no way am I going to tolerate that. So then I tried to write a piece about setting boundaries. And a lot of times we are trained or taught in our society to look in terms of binaries, black or white, all or nothing. Either you're going to be a victim or you're going to have to push them away to save yourself and save the family. And that really isn't true. There are a lot of more options in between those two extremes, don't you think?
You bring up an incredible point, Patrick, that, yeah, black and white, but man, is there a whole bunch of gray in between that we often don't see because we're in the midst of chaos and this tornado of a thing that's happening. It's really hard to see that gray. Can I ask you, Patrick, what's the gray area and how can they set up boundaries around that and not be asking their loved one to leave?
Some families get a lot of really good information from programs like yours, or they see something on HBO, or they learn something good. Yet when it comes to applying it to a tough situation like either allowing them to stay in the home or not stay in the home, that's where they're struggling and they feel like they need support to help them examine what their options are. And that's where professional coaching can come in to help them. So, but what I've noticed, Lori, is that oftentimes we're real clear on what are the risks of kicking them out of the home, for example. Sometimes we're real clear about that they could come to harm, that kind of thing. But oftentimes we don't look at the other side. What are the risks if we don't take some sort of action? And it could be allowing things to stay the same, to not change. It seems like maybe it's just human nature, but we don't often think, gosh, if I let things go on and if I don't intervene in some way, that could be a negative as well.
I have noticed that a lot, actually.
People oftentimes are stuck in one mode. They might have no boundaries, or sometimes they might have strict boundaries that might be unnecessary. But for them to be thinking about, well, how do I evaluate the risks and benefits of different positions, they, in my experience, people have no clue. So it's so helpful to have them learn that. And then you see there, I mean, a lot of my work is done on the phone. I don't see their faces, but it's as if I can see like the clouds part, the sun comes out and they say, got you.
What you just described is black and white thinking. And that's what I see a lot of too. I see families either they're the doormat or they're laying down these really tight rules and they're digging their feet
ultimatums and that
kind of thing, but never in between because they don't know how to, they don't know how to come into the gray area. And there's all sorts of things you can do. We just are so stuck in, well, I either got to walk around, you know, and not address it, avoid it, or I got to dig my feet in.
Right.
You need to just gain some confidence, even when your loved one pushes back. What your response is and how you handle things, whether you are compassionate and caring, but still assertive in your needs, can ultimately determine whether this is going to move positively or negatively. So if you change your response or your behavior under certain circumstances, your loved one might get confused and might not respond back to you in a very positive way. But if you can sit with it for a little while and kind of let the dust settle a little bit, oftentimes there is change in a different direction. And oftentimes it can be pretty positive.
How would you describe when you see a family and say, you know, I love having you still come and you're doing really well? I mean, what does that look like when some people might consider it graduating?
It's interesting. I mean, the groups that I run are ongoing, so they don't ever stop, and you are more than welcome to come in and attend. And you often get a lot of letters when someone is going to disconnect, you know, saying this has been a really powerful and has changed my life.
How do they describe that when they say to you, thank you so much, we feel like we're good at this point? What is good for them?
What I hear most is that their relationship to their loved one is 10 times better than it was before. That they understand their loved one on a different level, and that they understand themselves a little bit better as well. It has something to do with this much deeper understanding about the connection, right? It's this deep understanding of where your role is and what your role is with your loved one, and coming to peace with things, being accepting of things, accepting your own limitations, and starting to appreciate the positive in your loved one, really appreciating that they have a lot more to bring to the table than just their addiction. It's almost like they leave the group with new insight into who their loved one is as a person. But also there is another group that stays with us long term, even though things have gotten, you know, a lot better. I think that it's that community and the pull. And I often see in the groups this, you know, someone's been coming for a couple of years and then we end up with someone new. And then that new person will come in and you can just see the terror and the anxiety and the depression. And oftentimes another family member might identify, with that story, and can really get in there and kind of pull them along and really, and it's just this built-in community of, we get you, right? No judgment here. We get you. Hang in. We're gonna be right there with you. Whatever works for you and whatever decisions you make, no judgment. Not just sitting around talking about our loved ones and this and that. We are here to learn skills and strategies and have a community and help support one another. But we are focused on learning different strategies and skills that are gonna make a difference. hang with us. We're going to pull you along with whatever you need.
Right. So it sounds like love, acceptance, no judgment. It's almost like nobody can make a mistake because there are no mistakes.
There aren't.
We do the best we can with what we know at the time.
There are opportunities to learn and to change. That's all it is.
I love that. There are opportunities to learn, to change, to grow, and to be better.
Right.
My guess is that they also feel confident. People who start with me, their confidence level is usually at a real bottom, but through the process of the work that we do, they gain confidence and they feel like they can manage things.
And at least there's nobody in our groups asking them to do something that every ounce of their body is saying they are not ready to do it or they shouldn't do it.
And what I love about your approach is that people can get better regardless of what their loved one chooses to do about substance use, right? So it's like people are taking back ownership in their own agency, and they can do that regardless of that other person's response.
Right, right. Yeah,
that's amazing.
Exactly it. That's exactly it. Yep.
That's amazing. So to know that families in any relationship can get better regardless of how that other person is doing, that must be just like such a relief and breath of fresh air for your families. Someone who's listening to this wants to consider participating, attending. Can you explain how they do that?
You could always email me at lcmac11@comcast.net. There's the Allies in Recovery website. It's located on there. It's also on RICARES, RICARES. RICARES website as well under their family resources.
Well, Lori, it's been a real pleasure. This has been a lot of fun. I can't wait to inform more people about your services and check out those rest groups that you provide. I think it's an awesome addition to help that's out there. We'll talk again real soon, okay?
Sounds good. Thank you, Patrick.
That brings us to the end of this episode. As always, thanks for listening to Family Addiction Coaching. If you enjoy the show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. And if you found this episode helpful, please ask two friends to give it a listen. Be sure to come back for the next Pro Tips episode for more insider information you won't get anywhere else, and check out the other episodes. Until then, this is Patrick Doyle, and you can find me at familyaddictioncoach.com.